Welcome to The Leadership Line, a podcast that covers everyday work issues from dealing with jerks at work to feeling burnt out. Tammy and Scott's experience, along with their different perspectives, help listeners grow, examine realistic options and alternatives, and identify those actionable solutions to the tough issues we face every day at work.
Hello, Scott and Tammy.
Good morning.
Yo.
Scott's always got a new take on the morning.
Absolutely.
You know, last week we talked a little bit about if you're changing jobs, what are some of the ways that you can gauge the fit of a job for you? And this week I wanted to ask kind of that same question, but from the hirer's side. If you're hiring, and right now a lot of people have been trying to hire, how do you make sure that once you're past skill set, how do you make sure that somebody's a good fit for your organization and not just a warm body, which some of us are tempted to just grab at sometimes?
Yeah. Earlier in my career, I would always get a little annoyed at leaders who would say, hey, we need a body for this. And finally, in a meeting, I said, well, if we need a body, there's a graveyard right down the road. We can just go dig one up.
Did you really say that?
Yes, I did. To me, it's just hilarious that it's like, last time I checked, they're a human being and they need to have some kind of skill set.
Interesting.
The organization I worked for called them headcount.
Oh, cool. So you only need the head.
Yeah, only need the very top part.
You guys are cracking me up. I did a focus group earlier this week and there was a phrase that I asked them to respond to. And they were like, we're not talent. And I was like, what? And they're like, that is so insulting. We're human beings. Where's the humanity in this? Don't refer to us as talent.
We make it
talented. And I was like, wow. But I mean, in all honesty, the way that we talk about things like this does, in many cases, indicate value.
I would have never guessed that the word talent would do that.
Oh. In fact, that was the most emotional of the three focus groups. They really responded to that word and they were like, teammate or talented teammate. And it was like, all right. I mean, it was very interesting. So I love that, you know, we need a body. No, we need a talented teammate.
You know, if I'm going to hire a role, I'm going to make the assumption that you have thought about what do you need for that role? What are the knowledge, skills, abilities, behaviors that you need. So I'm going to make the assumption, which may be another great podcast. How do you do that work?
Well, and we would tell you predictive index, do a job match, right?
So totally. Yeah.
Right.
I think it's head, heart, and briefcase. Okay. And so the briefcase is what is your background? What's your knowledge, skills, ability, education? Where'd you work before? What's your skill set? Oh, cool. You can, the technical stuff Carmen referenced.
And by the way, the research says that that makes up about 11%, 10, 11% of will this person be successful in the job? Mm-hmm. So that's the smallest piece. Yep. And yet most people, that's 100% of what they do. But it only represents about whether or not you're going to have a 10 or 11% success rate of a great fit.
Yeah. And then the heart is, do they align with your values? So there's questions around whatever your values are. And so that, of course, is going to vary from organization to organization. And so some kind of questioning and exploration around how does that person align with your values? And as a leader, that is going to be an interpretation of what they say and how they act. I always ask the person at the front desk when they like check them in, how were they? What did they act like?
How do they treat you?
Right. I mean, because I want
a qualifying phone call. How did they answer the phone? How did they treat you when the person who qualified them, right? That piece, we should be looking again, at not at what people say, but the behavior in those interactions. Yes.
And that behavior compared to what you're targeting for that job. So they might say, gosh, they really didn't talk a lot. I don't know. And some people would say, well, gosh, they're unfriendly. Maybe they just don't talk a lot. And now it's going to sound like I'm stereotyping, but why not? We'll have some fun. If they're a computer programmer and they're going to be sitting and not working with people, I don't need a chatty person for that role. So that might be okay. Versus, hey, they're in sales and I need them to initiate conversation. And they're like dry? No, it's in something, there's a mismatch.
And by the way, that's, we miss out on a lot of good candidates because we think friendliness or the ability to talk to strangers is required. Actually, it's not in some jobs. Let's just face it. We have some folks that we really want that, you know, would work really well for us that we put them in a cube and they are independent of us in many ways. So that friendliness quotient, that's not what we're looking for when we're talking about these pieces of data in the interaction with us. We are looking to say, hey, what we need in this job, are we seeing that in the way that they behave when they think no one's watching? Okay.
And then the last part is the head. And that really is the behaviors and the cognitive ability. And think cognitive ability is their learning style, how quickly they learn, how well do they retain information. And again, depending on job, that there is a scale there that you have to pay attention to. And the behaviors are really what kind of behaviors do we want? We talked about one, right? Are they chatty or do they keep to themselves? And you think that's two ends of one scale. And depending on the role, I may want one more to one side or the other. And I have to be really thoughtful. So I'm going to target my questions around those things. And then I think Tammy and I would absolutely tell you that if you should use some sort of an assessment that is scientific to confirm what you're seeing in the conversation you have.
You know, if you think about this, if the three of us saw an accident and the policeman came and interviewed each of us, the data says that Carmen would say, she would give her, like, this is what I saw. And I would say, this is what I saw. And Scott would say, this is what he saw. And you would think it would be the same thing because we were all standing right next to each other when this happened. However, that's not accurate. Because we are not really good observers of human behavior. We don't connect with everything that's there. So it's one of the reasons that we are going to tell you, if you were to use a scientific-based data tool to help you with that, takes away a lot of the subjectivity and it provides kind of a consistent perspective in this. And with that allows us to actually make better unbiased decisions, because I'm going to be biased about what I like, right? And those types of things. So it really is helpful to have a tool like Predictive Index to guide you in that. It's also helpful to make sure that you are not the only person interviewing.
And I think you said something, Tammy, that's really, I think, almost counterintuitive. Do I like the person? Actually, as a leader, your role isn't to like the person. Your role is to say, is that person the right fit for what I need to make us as a team and an organization successful?
Again, I talked with a client last night on my drive home, and they interviewed two candidates. They were like, oh, man, we like both of them, blah, 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 blah. And they went through this whole thing and they ended up choosing, let's just say, candidate B. All right. And then they just went back and checked the data. All right. This is what we're thinking. And candidate B was the best fit based upon the data that came. But they had really, really, really liked candidate A and almost chose candidate A. And when they looked at the data, at the profile for that person, it matched both of their profiles. And you know what? They liked that person, but that person was not going to be happy doing the kind of work that position. And so that piece. And Carmen, I know we didn't really answer your question, but here's why. There's not a set of questions to ask for these things, because each job and each organization is so unique that, you know, you could do a list, but if it's not geared towards your organization, or if it's not geared towards this job, you're not actually asking the right questions. So, yep, there's a set of value-based questions that you could probably ask from interview to interview to interview, because your values as an organization are yours. And if you guys are having problems or anybody wants a set of value questions, we have a bunch, and find the ones that fit your organization. great. But then when it comes to the position itself, it is asking questions that are going to uncover whether or not this person just naturally loves to do the kind of work that this job requires. And that's positional. That will shift from position to position.
And there may be some questions that you can identify to give you indicators that you might be able to use. So I'll give you one example. One that I love to do is my stoplight question. Okay. If you've been working all day, it was a horrible day. It was one of the worst work days you've ever had. It's 2 a.m. and you're driving home from work.
Oh, that's bad.
Okay. It's that bad of a day. You come to a stoplight and you get there and you stop and it's red. And it doesn't change and it doesn't change and it doesn't change. And you back up and you pull forward, and you flash your flashers. And really your two options are you either run it and go the short way home, or you turn right on red and you have to take the long way home. It's going to add about 20 or 30 minutes to your drive. What do you do?
I got a question. Yeah. Are there cars coming?
That may be part of your justification. What do you do?
Oh, goodness.
Okay. And so for me, what that is, what I like to then to hear, how do they rationalize what they do and why? And depending on the role, sometimes I want people to say, you know what? Now it's important to be a rule follower. I'm going to turn right. I'm going to long way home. And now I've asked other questions and I'm comparing that answer to other questions to say, okay, are they really a rule follower, or do they think that's the right answer for that question? Because I can tell you, I know what I would do. I would count to five and I'd run that damn light.
I wondered if we were going to get to vote on what would Scott do, because that was my guess.
The question is, did Scott actually slow down for that intersection? Yes. That's one of Scott's favorite questions, and I'll give you one of my favorite. Okay. I want you to think about all of the jobs that you've had in your entire life. It could have been that when you babysat, when you were, 12 years old for the neighbor's
paper kids. Route.
Right? Paper route. Maybe it's in Iowa. We have people who used to walk beans. We actually don't do that anymore. We do that with chemicals, but we used to walk beans, right? So it can be anything, being at the grocery store and shelving things, right? All the way to the job that you're leaving. Okay. It could be a volunteer job. And I want you to think about the work. When you had these jobs, what work made your day just fly by? Okay. That literally it was fun, right? It didn't feel as much like work as it just was. This is something you did and the day just flew by and it was enjoying, there was a lot of enjoyment in that for you. And when somebody can name that work and they tell me, oh, stocking shelves, it was so satisfying. You'd put everything in, everything had its place. It looked beautiful when you left. That tells me what kind of work brings you joy. Right. If they told me it was chasing those little neighbor kids, right, and running around, it tells me what work brings you joy. And I can look at these smaller jobs that you've had in other places, and I can extrapolate how the work that we're going to ask you to do fits with the work that brought you joy. And the time flew by, because I want someone to come to my organization and think that what we're asking them to do is like the best work ever. And so that's one of my favorite questions, right? You just have to extrapolate their answers and look at what that means. And I think that's the other thing just to remember. The questions you ask, if you have an absolutely right answer, and otherwise it doesn't work with the candidate, you're probably not asking the right questions. You need deeper and broader. And then kind of, as Scott said, ask that question multiple ways. And look for the messages that are in their answers that are going to give you a consistent picture of how they see the world.
What I would say is, when you start thinking about the questions, when I'm talking about like my technical skills, there probably is a right or wrong answer. Do they have that skill or not? That totally makes sense. When I get into values and the behavior ones, that's where I want a bit of a span so I can then compare and contrast and say, what's right with that answer? How does that align with what we need for the role? How does it not? What's the risk? Because that's where you can then start to make a decision about best candidate for the role.
Just point out, that's also the part where an assessment like predictive index is helpful. When we talked about predictive index, I just want to make sure people understand that that's the personality fit piece of assessment, not the skill set piece of assessment.
Yeah, great, great.
And honestly, the piece that Scott said is also super important. I mean, if you are the hiring manager, you shouldn't have to ask, do you have the right license? Do you have experience in fill in the blank? Because someone qualifying this person, if you're having the interview, they should meet the minimum expectations for that job. And the minimum expectations for that job is education, specific skill sets, licenses, whatever that is for your particular job. And so I will tell you, that should all be taken care of before it gets to the hiring manager. And once the hiring manager is in here, this is all about behavioral, all about values, right? All about cultural fit, organizational cultural fit. And so in that particular spot, it's really critical to understand if you're asking questions like, you know, tell me about your work history. You've just wasted 10 minutes, right? That should already be checked off that list.
The briefcase piece.
That's correct. I love that. The briefcase should already be taken care of. And now we're on to the next two pieces. And by the way, if you actually ask briefcase, heart, and head, and you see that what you have already predetermined matches, you will actually have an opportunity to boost your kind of like hiring the right person. By Scott, is it 67%?
No, it's closer to 80.
Okay. So think about that. Just your regular way that most people do this, just recognizing briefcase, heart, and head, and asking questions around that and listening carefully, you're in 80% increase in making a better hire who's going to do the job and will stay.
And that wraps up this week's episode of The Leadership Line. As always, feel free to reach out to us in the emails provided in this podcast description box, and be sure to check out our upcoming episodes always announced on LinkedIn. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.